Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or DSL Extreme. Hello, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Saturday, August 11th, 2007, on the Premier Radio Networks. This is show 377. Enjoy. Well, a very good day to you, and how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk about technology. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number, 8888-ASK-LEO. If you want to talk about tech, I mean tech, no, not just computers, the internet, too. Of course, it's cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players and home theater. Our home theater guy, Scott Wilkinson's coming up this hour. Anything with a chip in it, I want to talk to you about. I want to answer your questions, discuss trends, what's going on in the world around us having to do with technology. It's fun. You know, it's interesting. I mean, that's one of the reasons I like it is, you know, it's just fascinating to me anyway. I hope to you. But even if it's not, you know, something that grabs you, if you're not an enthusiast, it sure is something you need to know about. Whether it's tools to get work done, keeping up with the world around you, with having your kids keep up with life. I mean, if a kid grows up and doesn't know about technology when they hit the workforce, what are they going to do? You know, I mean, there are only so many jobs at Burger King. You got to know about technology now. And if you want a great job, you got to know a lot about technology. I think you got to be good at it. Good news is it's not hard. It's something you can do. Anybody can do. It isn't hard. A six-year-old kid could sit down on a computer and feel comfortable with it. We get intimidated. We get scared. The idea of technology might be, you know, it's new. It's something different. That's the definition. Technology is something that wasn't invented when you were born. Seriously, that's the definition. It's a tool that wasn't invented when you were born. So if you lived in the 14th century, it might be a fork. That was I can't use a fork. Oh, no, no. that's way beyond me. I'm too stupid to use a fork. Or buttons. Or in the 19th century, the zipper. Oh my goodness, the zipper. I don't know if we're ready for the zipper. Is the world ready for the zipper? I'm sure back then there were people who said, no zippers. Uh-uh. Bad news. That's technology. You probably heard the term Luddite applied to people who don't like technology. You know who the Luddites were? They were named after a guy named Ned Ludd, who was a weaver. And most of the Luddites were, I believe, textile workers in Britain who didn't like industrialization because the power looms put them out of work. And they went around and destroyed looms. Now, I understand if you're being put out of work by technology that you might hate technology. You might feel like, oh, it's taken my job. But what's a better strategy, to try to destroy the looms or to try to figure out a way to work with them so that you'll be more valuable? That's what this show is about, is how to make technology your friend. We're not about destroying looms here. We're not Luddites. Even if you don't like technology, you don't have to be a Luddite. You need to understand it. You need to put it to work. And you know what? It is the best tool ever. It could take one person's voice and make it so powerful. I look at videos on YouTube, and I look at the number of downloads on some of these videos. And it just blows my mind. I was looking at one recently, this week, one I hadn't seen. And, you know, it's funny. It takes a while for these viral videos to spread around the world, of course. You know, the word to get out. But I was watching this amazing video. It's called Battle at Kruger. Have you seen it? 10 million people have watched this on YouTube. 10 million people. It's just a home video somebody shot on safari in Africa. And it's more dramatic than half the Hollywood movies. It's about 8 minutes long. It's not for the squeamish because it's real life. It's a family of water buffaloes, a mom and a dad and a kid walking by a lake. They're spotted by a pride of lions. The lions chase them and get the baby. They get the baby. And they start to beat on the baby. But they're by the lake, and the alligators notice this, and they start to come up, and there's a tug of war for this baby between the lions and the alligators. It's very dramatic. You're going, oh my goodness, this is awful. This is terrible. This poor baby. But then the cavalry comes to the rescue. The whole herd of water buffalo come back, and they chase the lions off. They chase the alligators off. They rescue the baby, and he walks off with them. Now, this is true life video shot by somebody at safari. Battle at Kruger. It's at Kruger Lake. It's amazing. But the thing that I find interesting is that, you know, it's handheld. It's not edited. Shaky cam. 10 million people have seen this. That's like the ratings for a Seinfeld episode. It's mind-blowing to me that this stuff, this little handheld shaky cam stuff, now has a voice, now has a place to go. And that's, to me, that's what's interesting about technology, is that video, music, writing, whatever the thing you like, art, you now have a chance to have a voice, an amazing voice. So, yeah, you can say, oh, I don't like technology. I don't want to have anything to do with technology. It's bad. I'm going to be a Ned Ludd and destroy it wherever I see it. I'm going to complain. You could be. There's a guy, Andrew Keen. He's getting a lot of press right now. He's written a book about the internet and why it's ruining our culture and why it's terrible and everybody should just run away. He calls it the Great Seduction. And he thinks it's the end of the world. This internet is the end of the world, primarily because of videos like this Battle at Kruger, because he believes, well, anybody could be on the internet. Oh my gosh. How horrible. You're ruining it for everyone. Sir Elton John, did you see this? He says, oh, you know, music is just being ruined by the fact anybody can create it now. I think we should. He wants to close the internet for 5 years. We should close the internet for 5 years. See what happens. He says, see what happens. These are people who just don't get it. So I think if you're listening to the show, you probably get it. You probably understand, even if you don't like it, that this is something that's about to change our lives. It is changing our lives, and it's going to only get faster and more accelerated as time goes by, and it's going to change it in so many areas, and we can ignore it, we can hate it, we can run away from it, or we can embrace it and figure out how it works and use it to our advantage. And those who do are so powerful now. It's so amazing. So let's talk about it. 888-ASK-LEO. That's 888-827-5536. When the telephone first came out, people thought it was the work of the devil. How could it possibly throw your voice across the country? There's something wrong with that. There's something wrong with that. 80. Now it's because it's something that you grew up with, right? It was invented before you were born. 888-ASK-LEO. You're comfortable with it. You just press the buttons and there it goes. What's magic about that? Technology is just something that wasn't around when you were born. And it means you've got to adapt to it. You've got to understand it. You've got to get it. And I think I mean, it's interesting. Even people who love technology, people I work with who are just technology fans, sometimes go, whoa, I can't go there. It's too much now for me. They'll look at something like Second Life, which is a 3D world that people wander around in. And really, many people spend hours and hours in, or World of Warcraft. And they go, that's going too far. And you know what? Certainly we all have our limits. Second Life, to me, I don't get it. I look at it, I go, I don't get it. But I look at it, I watch it, I'm interested by it, because people do get it. Some people do get it and use it. And there are people who've made millions of dollars, they say, in Second Life. Real money. Because there's an economy and you can trade your Linden bucks that you make in Second Life for real dollars. And there are people who are millionaires speculating on real estate in Second Life. What? Is that amazing? How is that even possible? All right, so let me tell you a little bit about what we do here. Besides taking calls, I have guest experts, people like Scott Wilkinson, our home theater expert, who's coming up in just about 20 minutes. We also have a chat room, and that is a great place to go. Usually 200 or 300 people in there. We've had as many as 400. Now, that's big for a chat room, so it does scroll by pretty quickly, but we do invite you to go. If you don't feel like you want to type into the chat room, you can just watch it go by. The address of that is irc.dslextreme.com. It's for the multitaskers among us. Those who, it's not enough just to listen to the radio and maybe drive a car. No, they need a chat room. They need video. They need audio. They need 18 different things. You know who you are. So the chat room is there for you. if you don't have a chat client, if you've never used IRC, that's the kind of chat we use, the Internet Relay Chat. If you've never used that, if you go to the webpage, irc.dslextreme.com, there's a little Java-based client there. You can use that. Just type in that. There's a field at the bottom. Just type, say hello. It's moderated. We've got Dan and Dustin and Mick and Sasha in there keeping an eye on things. I don't know where Mike B is today. Maybe he's taking the day off. Check it out. They're telling me that Stephen Kay in the chat room just mentioned, did you see the article in the journal about the guy who has a wife in Second Life and a wife in his real life? They're not the same person. And the real life wife is saying, what the heck? I don't blame her, but really, what are the rules for that? It's not like he probably has never even met the woman. So what are the rules for that? Is it cheating? I think that's the kind of stuff I like to talk about. We have a website too, and I think I'm going to be in charge of the website because I think Shuby's got the day off. Maybe we can get some help from some of the people in the chat room. It is, but usually I'll put show notes up there. You know, links, things I talked about. We'll get that article, for instance, up there. And that is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. We're getting very close to releasing the news site. I'm very excited about that. And this is August 11th. This is show 377. You just click Saturday's show. That'll take you there. Oh, somebody is taking show notes. We've got already articles about with the home video on YouTube and the Elton John. So somebody's doing it. And also there's video. I'm doing the video again. I don't know why, but people want to somehow, for some reason, want to watch me talk. Nah, nah, nah. You can go to twit.tv/live, twit.tv/live. And you can watch. I'm doing something different now. Screencast my screen so I can show you close-ups of what I'm talking about. That's kind of neat. And then picture of me talking. Both of those are available with audio at twit.tv/live. Your call's next. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Here we go, Leo.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. That's the phone number. We can talk about the new Macs, the new iLife, the new iWork. Apple, big announcements this week. If you're a Mac fan, something to say. You know, I'll talk about it probably on the next show because I want to save some stuff to talk about. But I have an opinion about what Apple's up to. It's very interesting. You know, if you look at the new iMacs, they're not much faster, really. They're very slight improvements over the previous iMacs. It's all about design. And what I'll expand on later is, in my opinion, what's happened now with the computer industry, and you're seeing the same thing at Dell, by the way, is they realize that there's no compelling reason to upgrade. Especially if there's not a new operating system. If you got Vista or Leopard's not out till October, there's no compelling reason to upgrade. You've got plenty of power on even a computer a couple of 3 years old now is fine to do most of what people want to do. It's kind of tough now for computer manufacturers. How do we convince people to buy a new computer? Well, How does Detroit convince people to buy new cars? Cars really, these days, last 10, 15 years. They should go 150,000, 200,000 miles in many cases. How do you convince somebody to buy a new car? New models, new styles, new looks. And Detroit learned this very quickly, that if you fins this year, no fins next year, people then start feeling, oh, those fins, that looks kind of old. I might have to get a new car. They haven't figured out how to make a computer have the new car smell, but they have figured out how to change the design on a regular basis to make you feel like you need the new one because it looks better, not because it's faster. We'll talk more about that next time. Let's get to the phones. We've got a lot of great callers lined up, starting with Rochelle, who's on the line from Hesperia, California. Hi, Rochelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. My name is Rochelle. We have three computers at home. We are trying to put on just some basic games for my daughter on our oldest computer, which has 98 as an operating system. Our current computers, our others with XP, seem to reject her software based on the fact that the screen resolution that it wants
right.
is too low.
Kids' software almost always is 8-bit color, 256 colors, 640 by 480.
Right, yeah. So we're trying to put it on this old 98 we have. The problem I have now is it's being rejected by that because somewhere along the lines we've lost the disks.
Here's what you want to do, and you could probably run them on the XP machine, actually. But what you have to do is run them in compatibility mode. So go ahead and put them on the machine. Can you at least install them?
Yeah, we can install them at the point where we go to run them, where it says uh-uh.
So what you want to do is right-click on the program icon in XP, And there's something called compatibility mode. So I'm trying to, let's see if you can do it. You can't do it on the shortcut. You actually have to find the program icon. It'll be in the program files folder. Or you could right-click on the shortcut and then say find target. I don't know why they say find target, but what that really is the program itself.
Okay.
And there's you can do it on the shortcut. I apologize. There's a compatibility tab. So you're going to right click and select properties and select the compatibility tab. And then you'll check the box that says run this program in compatibility mode for Windows 98. And okay. There are display settings below that. You'll say run in 256 colors and run in 640 by 480 screen mode. And what that'll do is tell the program, you're just running in Windows 98 on an old screen. And actually, it will change your screen mode. In most cases, the reason they put that in fact, I think, is for these particular kids' programs.
So there's no way for me to, if I can't find it online, because I've looked everywhere, to find those old Sound Blaster drivers for the 98?
So if you really want to install it on those machines and you don't, it says, what is it saying? What error message are you getting?
It says that it won't run because there's no available sound. The card is there, but there's no driver.
Can you hear sound in other programs? Can you hear sound in other programs? Can you hear sound in other programs?
No, there's no sound on it at all. There's no sound drivers because we basically wiped it and did a reinstall, but we don't have all of the restore disks.
I see. Who made the computer? Is it a homemade computer or is it made by a manufacturer?
It's an old gateway.
It's a gateway. You almost certainly can go to the gateway site and find drivers for that machine. You probably want to do that, but that's preferable to doing it than going to the Creative Labs site and getting the Sound Blaster drivers. But you can also, I mean, all of these drivers are online.
Well, my biggest problem has been identifying which drivers are for that card because I can't seem to get to figure out which card it is.
Right. So the way you do that is to open the hardware, the device manager. So you'll right click on my computer, select properties, go to the hardware device manager, and you'll look at the sound card.
I've tried doing that before, and it's not listing the card.
It doesn't give you any information about the card?
None at all. And I even tried going through where...
So you don't actually see a sound card in there?
No, but I know it has one.
Well, wait a minute. But you don't see a sound card in there.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that you have the hardware and Windows doesn't see it doesn't matter if you put drivers in there.
Okay.
The problem is you're not now, the card either is dead or has fallen out, or I would suggest reseating the card. I don't think it's seeing the card. In fact, you may find that it finds the drivers just fine once you can see the card. The hardware is not there now.
Okay.
If the hardware were working or visible to Windows, you'd at least see an entry, even if you don't have the drivers.
Okay.
So that's, I think what you should do is open the case. Have you been inside?
No.
Yeah, it's probably shook loose. On an old computer, it probably shook loose. So what I would do is open the case and reseat the card. Sometimes they can get a little corroded, might take a look at the contacts on it and see how they look. You can even use a pencil eraser. Take the card out and erase any corrosion on there. Make sure you blow away any debris before you put it back in. If you really have to, you can get contact cleaner. But I would just try reseating the card. Sometimes that'll be enough. It doesn't see the card. So having a driver is not going to help if the machine can't even see it. Home theater coming up. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy from the Perfect Vision magazine. Talk about big screen TVs. You stay right here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I got a billboard to play, Leo.
The Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866 the number 2 GetNet or visit them online at dslextreme.com.
I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. From the beautiful Tech Guy Labs in Northern California to Southern California we go just for a minute before we get back to more of your calls with Scott Wilkinson. He is the video editor for the Perfect Vision magazine, which you'll see on newsstands. Beautiful magazine, as befits its name, of course. But what else would it be? But also available for free from AV Guide. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
I'm great, Leo. How about yourself?
Very well. I always look forward to this because I'm learning a lot about home theater. You know, I talk about it on the show, but I'm not the expert. You're really the expert. But today I want to talk about something I noticed the other day. I was in the movies, and it said all of a sudden, DLP projection, Christie. And is that a digital projector?
That's what it is. That's right.
How widespread is this? Am I just lucky?
Well, you are lucky because, in my opinion, I personally prefer digital presentation, such as what you saw, over film presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are purists who would disagree, but this new trend towards digital cinema is, I think, a wonderful, wonderful thing.
And why?
Texas
why
Instruments,
is it better?
Well, why is it better? There's many things about it. There's no film involved. They're all digital files.
So either you don't get the film breaks, the loops, the bubbles, the hairs, and the gate, all that
stuff. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, there's no degradation over time. The thousandth time you watch it, it looks identical to the first time you watched it. Whereas with film, you'll get scratches, you'll get dirt, and so on and so forth. Also, there's no what's called film judder. And what that is as the film is being pulled through the projector, it's a very violent process, actually. The film, each frame has to stop in front of the lens and get the light shown through it, and then the next frame gets... Yeah,
I thought it just zipped by.
Nope. It's starting and stopping and starting and stopping and starting and stopping 24 times a second.
Wow.
And that causes some inevitable jitteriness or judder, what's called judder, in the picture.
How interesting.
It also tends to make the picture look slightly less well-focused. When you were in the digital cinema there, DLP, did you notice how sharp and crisp that picture looked?
It did. It was absolutely... It's kind of like watching it at home on my plasma, actually.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
The DLP cinema projector is much the same as the DLP projector you can buy for a home theater. It uses the same technology and everything. It's just bigger, and it's got a bigger lamp that outputs a lot more light because it's got to light up a 20, 30, 40-foot wide screen, as opposed to, you know, maybe a 6 or 7 foot wide screen at home, something along those lines.
Does Christie make all of these, or are there other companies that do?
No, there are three basic companies that make digital cinema projectors. Christie is probably the most well known. Barco is another one, and NEC is the third one.
Any of them better than, I mean, should I look for an NEC theater, or does it matter?
No, I wouldn't. I think at this point, the most important thing to do is to look for a DLP or digital cinema theater. And there's a great way to do that. You go to dlpcinema.com and enter your zip code, and it will show you all the digital cinemas, DLP cinemas, in your area, and which ones are showing something and what they're showing and what the show times are and all that stuff. It's a great resource. And I very much recommend that if you're going out to the movies, see if you can find a DLP or digital cinema presentation near you. It's, to me, I find it a much more satisfying experience now that I've been going to it for quite a while. Another advantage of digital cinema over film is, as you're watching a film, every 20 minutes or so, you get a little black circle in the upper right corner, right? That's the reel change marker. It's telling the projectionist it's time to switch over from one reel of film to another. And once you see that, you can never ignore it. It's you always see it every time. And
it's
with
true.
Digital cinema, it's not there. It's immaterial.
Now, I know when we went from albums to CDs, a lot of people complained. And I have a feeling that the same people are saying, oh, it's not as good as film. What is it that they don't like about the digital displays?
Well, I've heard this a lot from film buffs, and they say things like, it's too sharp.
It's not filmic.
It's not filmic. It's not film-like. It's not smooth. It's kind of sharp and harsh. And this is the same thing they said about CDs, if you'll remember. They said, oh, it just sounds brittle and harsh and cold.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't find CDs that way myself. I really like them. They sound fine to me. And
you're a musician, by the way, and an audiophile. So
Correct. I wouldn't exactly call myself an audiophile. And the interesting side note there, when I tell my audiophile friends that I don't consider myself one, they go, what? And then I say, well, I'm a professional musician. And they say, oh, well, that explains it, because I'm surrounded by live music so much that it doesn't matter how much money I spend on an audio reproduction system. It's never going to equal live performance.
Oh, that's really interesting.
I think so, too. So
you're the ultimate audiophile. You hate reproductions.
That's right.
You're a real audiophile.
A real audiophile.
That's interesting.
Exactly. Now, in terms of video and visual, I would call myself a videophile, absolutely, yeah. Because I want a real high-fidelity image to look at.
Right.
And this is what I think DLP cinema provides. When I go to the theater, if I can find, in particular, special effects-laden movies and cartoons, particularly modern animation,
well, I was gonna say
all done on computer anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say that when the original source material is digital...
Yep.
It's particularly good. Shrek.
Oh, it was so phenomenal in digital. Yeah. It was just beautiful. So, yes, absolutely. These are all reasons why I prefer to go to a digital cinema when I can.
Are more movies being made digitally?
Not very many. Most of them are still shot on film, if we discount animation.
Right.
Animation's all made digitally. But when you're talking about live action... Well, the George Lucas, the Star Wars films, and so on.
We're moving that way. When we get to these red cameras, I think you're going to start seeing more film. Of course, it'll be 4:4:4:4, right? It'll be I can't remember.
Yeah, uncompressed.
Uncompressed, and it'll be double the resolution of HD. So everything's going to change.
Well,
Screens HD? Are these Christie's HD? What is the resolution on them?
Very good question. Very good question. Mostly these days, they're at a resolution that's called 2K, which is 2048 by 1080, roughly.
And 1080p, in other words.
In other words. Yes, exactly right.
But these red cameras now, we're going to 4K.
Correct.
And that's the new standard, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. It is the new standard. Sony actually has a 4K digital cinema projector based on their SXRD technology.
Wow.
Landmark Theaters have announced that they will install these.
So you're saying it's 2160 instead of 1080? 2160p.
Correct. It's 4096 by 2160.
Oh, my goodness.
That's correct. And in a big, really big screen, like a big commercial cinema, that does make a difference. In a smaller multiplex, I don't think it's going to make that much difference. I've seen 4K, Sony 4K projector in its prototype form, and it's still not ready for prime time. I'm going to a digital screening one of the older movies that have been reformatted in digital, and they were talking about using a Sony 4K, but Sony wasn't reluctant, in fact, to let them use it because it's not quite ready yet, and they've been working on it for years.
Is film? Can you say film is 4K, 2K? I mean, I know it's apples and oranges, but
it kind of is. Film is really more or less an analog format, and the way they get them into digital format is to scan them with a digitizer, basically. And you can scan them at 2K or 4K or even 6K or 8K. You can scan them at just about anything you want, and you'll get that resolution, because ultimately, I guess, film resolution depends on the grain.
Well, that's the thing. At some point, it's a diminishing returns because of all
that
grain.
It is a point of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
Plus, there's the cost issue,
right?
Which is 4K. Scanning, even at 4K, is wildly expensive in terms of storage capacity.
Right.
So
I know with still photography...
Mm-hmm.
When we get to 10, 11, 12 megapixels and the whatever it is, 6 to 8 aperture range, that you're very close to film quality. I mean, you're as good as film, maybe even better than film at that point.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I've often wondered to myself, at what point does digitizing finer and finer and finer become moot because the human perception system can't even tell?
Yeah, can't see
it, can't hear it in the case of digital audio. I don't really know what that point is, but I'll bet you it's not much higher than 4K.
Well, because this show is heard in Hollywood, I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who have lots of strong opinions. I'd love to hear from you. 8888 Ask Leo. Certainly, if you have a chance to see something in DLP, I can tell you it really does look great.
I look for it every time I can. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, and I'm thrilled that my local small hometown theater has it.
Excellent.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Scott. Remember, you can catch Scott in his magazine. It's the Perfect Vision magazine, available on newsstands and at avguide.com. And he joins us every Saturday to talk about home theater. Next week, we're going to talk about audio formats on high def discs. Something to listen for, I guess, instead of something
absolutely
to look for. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Scott's a musician and an audiophile, so he can talk as much about audio as he can about video, too. Hey, let's get another call in here before the break. Steven on the line from Yakima, Washington. Hey, Steven. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hi. Welcome.
I've been listening to you for about 6 years now. I'm 17, so I started at 11.
I feel like Harry Potter. You grew up with me.
I was inspired by you to do a podcast.
Excellent.
Can I give out the
plug
link?
Plug away, my friend. You
all
bet.
Right. StephenG.org with Stephen with a V.
StevenG.org.
Yes.
And what do you talk about? Indie music.
I play
indie
music on it.
Cool.
And this last week, I interviewed a musician, and I used iChat because she was on a Mac. But I want to know, is there an easy way to record with Skype? Because I wasn't really happy with the audio quality.
Skype is so much better. We tried iChat for a while, but Skype works Mac, PC, and Linux. That's one of its advantages. The way I record Skype is I use a mixer, so I have a separate, independent recorder, and it's a much better way to do it because your voice is separate. But let me talk about some of the options to recording Skype because there's several ways to do it. Hang on the line. We'll talk more. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. We're talking about recording Skype. Skype is, it was my pick last year for the program of the year. Just a world changer. I mean, when I say the program of the year, I don't mean solely because it's, so well written or anything. Not at all, in fact. But solely because of the fact that it's changing things. It makes... it changes so much. For instance, all of my netcasts, the internet radio shows that I do, are done via Skype. It's enabling technology for me for those because I am in a small town in Northern California, and most of the people I do the shows with are spread out all over the country, all over the world. We have a guy on this radio show who calls in from Germany. He uses Skype, so the call's free. The quality's better than phone. It's an amazing technology. SKYPE.com. It's free for Mac, Windows, Linux. And it's what I use, as I said, to record the podcast. So does Stephen at StephenG.org for his, he was using iChat. Now, here's why I like Skype. It sounds better. In fact, Scott Wilkinson was on Skype just a minute ago. That was Skype. Now, you heard every once in a while, you hear a little bit of an odd buzzing electronic sound, and that's typical of voice over the internet. If there are packets lost or there's some delay, you get a little burble sound. And if you were listening closely to Scott, he sounded like he was in studio, except for those times. And then if you're savvy, you go, oh yeah, he's on Skype. The problem with Skype is recording it. When you are using it on a computer and you try to record the audio on the computer, the only thing you can record is the other guy. You can't record your own voice. So there's a couple of ways to solve this. One would be to have a separate recording of your voice. In fact, for a while when I was using Skype, I'd have a headset on and then headphones on and then have a separate two microphones, one for recording my voice, one for recording Skype. And that works okay. So you could record Skype on a Mac. You would just use Audacity or any recording program. Wiretap is a good choice. Many people like Audio Hijack Pro. That's about a $40 program from Rogue Amoeba. And the advantage of Audio Hijack Pro is you can then, it's complicated, but they have a setup in their help, channel your mic as well and record all of it. But for Windows, a good choice is Pamela. Actually, I really think Pamela is kind of an interesting idea. Pamela for Skype. If you do a Google for Pamela and Skype, if you just do Pamela, you'll get Pamela Anderson. A lot of pictures of her. You don't want that. This is the one problem with Google. It's not smart.
Pamela for Skype is pamela-systems.com. And it's kind of a web-based recording system, but I think it's a really interesting product. Pamela-systems.com. This is for Windows users. A really good way. I think the best way to record Skype on Windows. There are other things like Total Recorder that will do it, but Hot Recorder that will do it, but I don't like the results. So try Pamela on Windows. And as I mentioned to Stephen, the way I do it is I actually have some equipment, because I do a radio show too, so I happen to have a professional microphone, professional mixer. And in many ways, that's the best way to do it, because you can separate your voice out from the Skype call. So I speak into this mic, and as a matter of fact, record it. It goes into the mixer. My voice goes from the mixer into the computer so that the callers can hear me. And their voice comes back from the computer also into the mixer. I don't send them their voice back. I just record their voice onto a separate recording device. So then I have my voice in one channel and the Skype in another channel. That's actually the best way, in my opinion, the best way to do it. Enough of that. And I just wanted to make sure I gave him a good, clean answer on that. So thank you, Stephen. Good luck with your podcast. Stephen K. I'm sorry, or is it G? I'll type it in and see if my browser remembers. StephenG.org. And I'll have to listen to your podcast. Spencer's on the line from Hopedale, Washington. I'm sorry, Massachusetts. Hello, Spencer. How are you?
Hey, Leo. It's so great to finally get to talk to you.
Oh, well, so glad you called.
I've got one thing before I get to my question. I've got a joke that I know only one person will get other than you, and I've been wanting to tell it forever.
Is it a geek joke?
Very stupid geek joke.
All right, let's hear it.
It's really funny.
Let's hear it.
It's that the internet is run by two ports, the USB port and the Leo Love port.
You know where they used that joke? Kevin Rose said that on the Tiki Bar.
Tiki Bar, yeah.
Yeah, wasn't that a great episode?
That was good. We had Kevin Rose in and everything. That was great.
Yeah, I keep waiting. You know, Dr. Tiki and Lala and Johnny have been on my TV show because we do it up there in Vancouver. That's where they are. And they keep saying, we're going to do a Tiki Bar episode with you, but my schedule is tough, so I'd love to do the Tiki Bar. I love that podcast. It's a video podcast. Very funny. Kind of adult. Not for everybody.
Yeah. Well, my question was, I've got a Belkin wireless pre-in router at home with Comcast internet connection and everything.
Okay.
And I'm running a 5-computer, 2 gaming console, and 1 iPhone network at home. And what keeps happening is at least once a day, my router will completely just stop sending out a wireless signal. So I have to get up, unplug the thing, count to pretty much 20, plug it back
in. Reset it, yeah.
And it'll start working again.
You're sure it's the router that all the devices lose a signal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it stops broadcasting. I'll look at the router and it'll just, instead of a solid wireless light, it'll just be flashing. Right, it's not sending out any type of signal.
And if you go on your iPhone or your computer or your game machine, they aren't getting, what are they getting, nothing?
They're getting nothing. Like, I've got a MacBook, and it won't even show my network.
It's zero. Oh, it doesn't even show up. Okay, got it. So, yeah, it's turned itself off or stopped broadcasting.
Yeah.
That's not normal. Surprise, surprise. And it is not generally that kind of behavior. It doesn't come from interference from a device in your house or from other users. That's the router. It could be overheating. I'd make sure that you're getting good cooling on that router.
Yeah, it is elevated and everything.
Okay. The other issue is it's just very possibly that it's, you know, not working right. Have you updated the latest Belkin firmware?
I don't believe so. No, yeah. I didn't know there was.
Always a good idea when you're having trouble with a router, just go onto the Belkin site. Usually the router, if you log into the router, will have a firmware update page or button, and usually what you'll do if you click the button is it'll send you to the web. You'll download a binary file, and then you go back to the router and say, okay, I've got the file, install it, and it'll install it. And usually it's certainly the first thing to do. If it continues to do that, then it could just simply be a hardware problem. Sorry to say. More of your calls to come. I'm Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, a good day to you. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. We're talking high tech at 8888 Ask Leo. Want to know what you think about technology? The internet, cell phones, camcorders, home theater. 888-827-5536 is the phone number. 888-827-5536. This was a big week for DRM, or actually for people who don't like DRM. You know what DRM is? Digital Rights Management. That's what the industry wants us to call it. For those of us who have to put up with DRM, that's probably not, it's not about digital rights management for us. It's about copy protection, copy restriction. That's, if you say DRM to people, they go, huh, unless they're, you know, techie and they're clued into all of that. They go, huh, DR who? Copy protection. Oh, copy protection. Yeah, I hate copy protection. Everybody hates copy protection. Not because we're thieves and pirates and copy protection gets in the way of our piracy. No, because if you're a pirate, frankly, it doesn't get in the way at all. Has copy protection slowed or reduced piracy to any degree? No. No. Because, first of all, it doesn't work. Copy protection doesn't work. And pirates know that. They immediately get around it. There are all sorts of ways to get around it. So why exactly do companies use copy protection? Well, I'm not sure. A fear that if they don't, it'll just be a free-for-all? I think that's probably why. EMI, the record label EMI, announced in January or February, I think, that they would start offering their catalog on iTunes without copy protection. Big experiment. And I think everybody was saying, whoa, certainly in the record industry going, whoa, well, this is, well, yeah, go, you go right ahead, EMI. We'll watch with interest to see what happens. So what happened? Well, their downloads went up. Their sales went up. The overall sales of music has been going down, and that trend was not reversed. Was not reversed, unfortunately. But there was no evidence that there was more piracy for EMI or that it hurt their sales to take off the DRM. In fact, if anything, it helped their sales. So now Universal Music Group, obviously watching this, has announced it's going to start testing DRM-free, copy protection-free music to see what happens. Now, they're not going to do it on iTunes, which is kind of silly since iTunes is easily the number one digital marketplace for music. They're going to do it on Amazon, real networks, and do it at some retailers. Rhapsody will offer it as well. Same price, which is interesting. And then the individual vendors will be able to decide what quality to put out. I think the best deal is going to be at Rhapsody, where for 99 cents, you can buy a song without copy protection at 256 kilobits. Now, this is really good news if you use an iPod, because in the past, you haven't been able to use anything from Rhapsody. Now, I presume without the copy protection, there won't be any bar to doing that. In a way, for I'm sure Rhapsody's jumping up and down. Suddenly, they have a market of 100 million iPod users who can use the music. Now, it's interesting that Apple's been left out. Probably the thinking, I would imagine the thinking at Universal as well, this is a test. We don't want to go wide with this because this could be a real problem. It may also be that, you know, remember Universal went month to month with Steve Jobs and iTunes in their contract just a little while ago. And I think that they're in a struggle right now over pricing with Apple. So it may also be a way of kind of shaking a stick at Apple. Recent survey of fans of UK music buyers said that almost all of them agreed when you explain it to them, you don't say the word DRM, but you say, would you buy music that has copy restrictions on it? Huge majority said no. The only way I'll buy music online is if it doesn't have copy protection on it. Sales of Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon on EMI, for instance, up 350%. I have to be, I admit, I was one of them. I had already, you know, I bought that album when it came out. I probably bought a CD of it at some point. But I didn't buy it online until it was available without copy protection and high quality. Now, the sales have leveled off, but the album sales for Dark Side of the Moon are up 272% since going DRM free. Smashing Pumpkins, Norah Jones, Coldplay, all up, while CD sales dropped in all for all those artists. So EMI successful. Universal's going to try it. Apparently Google is dropping their DRM on their video. Video is the last bastion of copy protection at this point. I have a feeling music's just going to start to tumble now. Once they see that sales go up, piracy doesn't go up. It can't go up. It's already universal. There's no way to stop pirates. Copy protection only slows down sales. This is the important lesson for these record labels. The only thing copy protection does, it doesn't stop piracy, it slows sales. I know it's kind of counterintuitive, but if you just look at the numbers, it's pretty obvious. Pretty obvious what's going on. I have a feeling that we're seeing the beginning of the end of copy protection, but video is still the place where you're, you know, the DVDs, high def discs, even especially stuff you download on the internet. Google's going to do their own DRM thing, their own copy protection, which is, I think, a little disappointing. I don't know if we really, I don't know. Do they think they can do a better job? They think they can write copy protection that can't be cracked? Maybe they do. That's ego. So if they do. What do you think? Do you like copy protection? That's an obvious. That's not. It's easy, isn't it? Do you like copy protection? No, of course not. Does it slow you down if you're a pirate? No, of course not. 8888 Ask Leo. I think this is a good. I think we're starting to see the beginning of the end. This was a good week for consumers and a bad week for copy protection. DRM. Let's say hi to Rochelle. Listening in Stevenson Ranch, California. Hello, Rochelle. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey.
How are you?
Great. Welcome.
Okay. My question is, I have an HP laptop with Windows. And long story short, I think that my ex-boyfriend may have done something to my computer because he's something like a computer guy.
Oh, boy.
And I have three users. And I can log into the two other users, but the main user, which was mine, I click on it. I try to do Internet Explorer, and it just keeps saying connecting. It won't ever connect to the Internet, but I can use the other two users.
That is often a symptom of spyware that's been removed. Have you ever tried to get rid of spyware or viruses and use software to do that?
Yeah, I've tried to.
Okay.
And now I can't even delete that. So I tried deleting that user. It won't let me delete it. I cannot remove any programs from. I can't even log
okay.
in to.
So what are the names of the other users?
Well.
Are they like
the
personal
like
names? Are they your boyfriend's names or?
Well, and no, the first one was Rochelle. The second one was his name, but I changed it to my name again.
Okay. And when's the last time your boyfriend had access to the hardware?
Oh, God.
It's been a while?
It happened in February. I even tried resetting it back to a previous date. It won't even let me do that.
But it happened at a time when he had access to it?
Yes.
Okay. So it's hard for me to say exactly what he's done, but first of all, it sounds like the account that you've been logging into, the one you're having trouble with, you don't have administrator access on.
Actually, can you set administration to two accounts to be administrator?
Yep.
Because I believe that I was administrator on
you can,
that one.
But he could have turned that off. You can
it's
have as many.
True.
All accounts can be administrator, or you always have to have at least one administrator, but all can be administrator. What you want to do is log into one of those other accounts. And then look at the users and see if that, make sure one of them is, you need to log into an administrator account. And then
okay.
you can look at that user that you're having trouble with and see if it's a limited user. It sounds like it is.
Okay.
By the way, that's the safest way to operate.
Okay. Oh,
so it's not bad to be a limited user. You don't want to be able to install applications because if you can, so can a bad guy, so can spyware and viruses.
Absolutely, right.
So normally I want you to run as a limited user and then log in as an administrator when you need to do things like install stuff. But I think what you need to do is log in with one of the other accounts, an administrator account, look at that user account, make it an administrator account. It sounds like that user account may have some policies set. You know, Windows allows an IT guy, maybe your boyfriend, your ex-boyfriend, to change your capabilities. And he may have disabled the internet and prevented. You can do that. You can set that as a policy.
Wow. Okay.
So he may have done that. You could, you know, somebody with who knows what they're doing could go in and reverse all those changes. It doesn't sound like they're permanent. But it may also be that that account has some spyware on it, or if it had spyware on it and you removed it in the process, you may have damaged your internet access. That's very common, by the way. Spyware, you know, often attaches to your internet access files, and then when it's removed, so is your internet access.
Yeah, you know, he was doing something. It was one evening, and he was doing something with Norton, I believe.
It may not have been nefarious. It may have been he was trying to do you a favor. But it might have had a bad side effect. I think that's probably what happened. Leo Laporte here. I am the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking with Rochelle just earlier. Ex-boyfriend, she's worried that he had access to her computer, might have had reason to get angry at her, and might have done something. Her computer's acting a little funny. Although, I want to say that what's going on with that computer is not unusual. Doesn't in any way, in fact, kind of indicate that there's some bad guy, you know, getting in there or anything. The problem is, you know, from a distance, over the phone, it's hard for me to tell exactly what's been done to it. So probably the best thing, Rochelle, to do is to bring it to a tech person and let them take a look at it. Here's probably what I would do. You say one of your accounts can't get online, the others can. That's a little weird. That sounds like it's a policy. If your WinSock, if your TCP stack had been damaged, then it would be damaged system-wide. None of them would be able to get online. So it sounds like, what it really sounds like has happened, and this would be exactly the symptoms you would get, is that your boyfriend, in fact, was trying to do you a favor. If I'm going to set up a system for my mom, here's what I would do. And he might have done this before he broke up with you. I would set up a limited user account for her, and perhaps use the policy editor to prevent her from doing some dangerous things. Maybe not. Maybe even keep her from getting online in that account. Lock it down. Sounds like that account's been locked down. The fact that the other accounts work fine and are accessible to you kind of sounds to me like he's not trying to do you any harm. If he wanted to do you harm, there's a lot of other stuff he could have done. Probably what I would do is log into an administrator account, not the one you're having trouble with. Copy the data over from the other account, the stuff in the documents folder, the music, whatever personal data you have in that account, copy it to the new, or create a new account from the administrator account, but copy it over to that new account, and then just simply delete that old damaged account. Just delete it. You can do that if you're an administrator. Now, you do not want to let somebody who has it in for you to have access to your hardware, because there's a lot of stuff they can do you would never see. You know, he could simply do some vandalism, damaging your data or keeping you offline. Or he could put a rootkit on your system that would give him permanent access to your system from now on, to your passwords, to your logins, to what you're doing at all times. He could have stolen your email address. This is, I think, disgruntled former lovers often do this if they have some tech skills. All I really need is your email password. I can read your email from now on. Does he suspect another guy? Well, what better way to do it than to read your email? Maybe read your chat transcripts. Monitor what you're doing online. Those are the things that I worry more about, and those things are invisible. I would change your email password. I would change every login that you have if you can. Change all those passwords, banking passwords, so forth. If you have any reason to believe that he's put a Trojan horse, if he really is, you know, a hacker type, and he's put a Trojan horse or a rootkit on your system, you know what I'm going to say now. There's only one way to completely get rid of that. That's to format the system and reinstall. I don't think there's necessarily any evidence. Only you know, Rochelle, if he's bad enough and evil enough to do something like that or skilled enough. But if that's the case, that's the only thing you can do to really protect yourself. It's always, never, you know, when somebody has, it's one thing to protect yourself with an antivirus, anti-spyware, firewall, and that stuff. That's for people who don't have physical access to your system. Once somebody gets physical access to your system, if they want to compromise you, they can. It's not, there's nothing to, nothing you can do to stop that. If they could physically access your system. Denise, Valencia, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Leo. I had a question. I had a 40 gigabyte G4 Mac, and I installed a 80 gigabyte hard drive, and I backed up all my information on my existing 40 gig, and now I want to move it to the 80 gig. Is the best way to do it is the migration assistant?
Yeah.
I did that, but with the iTunes, I backed up all my iTunes library. How do I move the library onto the new drive with the new iTunes?
Can you see the library? In other words, is the backup drive on? Is it attached? Is it mounted? Can you see it? In other words, yeah.
It's on the same computer.
Okay, so here's all you do. You go into the new iTunes, and you say add to library. You want to make sure your settings, by the way, and the preferences are that when you add something to the library, it copies the songs over into the library. And you say let iTunes manage songs. You want to check both those boxes in the preferences. When you then say add to library, it'll say, well, add what to library? You go over to the external drive where all your stuff has been backed up. You'll see the iTunes songs folder. And you just add all of that.
So I go into preferences.
So it's two steps. And the default preferences are correct. I just, in case they've been changed, it's worth checking before you do this. Because it's possible for iTunes not to make a copy of those library, of those music files, just to point to them. You don't want it to do that. So you're going to go into preferences. You're going to go into advanced, and you're going to check the box that says copy files to iTunes music folder when adding to library. Because what you're going to do is you're going to copy that those songs over from the external drive. Then you're going to go to file, add to library, and you're going to find the folder on the external drive where all the iTunes music is. And you're just going to say add that in, and it'll create a new library on your new drive with all the old songs on it.
Difference between import and export, because that's also with the add to library.
Yeah, there's two choices. You would import is a way of importing other music files in there. You don't really want to do that. You want it to add it to library so it'll actually add it to the list of songs you have. That's the one to choose. Leo Laporte here. I am the tech guy.
Carbonite automatic secure computer backup over the internet. Try it free at carbonite.com.
I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy from the Tech Eye Labs in beautiful Northern California, coming beaming your way all over this great country, in fact, all over the world, with high tech information and conversation at 8888 Ask Leo. And every week, a little high tech tomfoolery with our daily giz whiz. Little old
no,
giz-
it's Dick, not Tom.
Oh, no.
It's Dick Foolery.
No Foolery. Oh, Dick Foolery, not Tom
Dick Foolery. Dick Foolery, Tom's brother.
Hey, did you know Tom Snyder? Because I know he just passed away this week.
No, but I loved his show.
I did, too. And there's nothing on like that anymore. And I just...
No, where you just sit down and no one cuts you off. You can tell long stories.
People might not know. I mean, I call you Mad's Maddest Writer, but Dick wrote The Match Game for many... Wait a minute, what's that in the background?
I have a guest in the studio.
He wrote The Match Game for many years and met, you know, as a result, many of the celebrities of the last 20 or 30 years, more like 40 years.
Yeah, exactly.
When did The Match Game start, 71, 72?
The Match Game started, no, the original Match Game was like in the 60s.
Oh, wow. Now, wait a minute, you've got to tell me, I hear something in the background.
Okay, this is, here, let me hit, say something, buddy. come on, now I want them to talk. And, well,
all I hear is like servos going.
Yeah, I know, because you need.
Is it a robot? What do you got there?
You need the sound of. Here, let.
Blue suede shoes. Did he say blue suede shoes?
He said blue suede shoes. And now.
Is he a two for the show, three to get rid of. Wait, now, let me guess. Is this a robot Elvis? Is he shaking his hips?
He can't shake his hips because he's only down to the pockets of his leather jacket. But it's something brand new from Wowie.
Oh, yeah. They did RoboSapiens, that robot tour.
RoboSapien. Right. And Robo Chimpanzee. They have two lines. They have the Robo line, which is RoboSapien.
Were you about to say Robo Chimpanzee?
Yes. Wowie.
Wait a minute.
And I think they call it Wowie Alive. The chimpanzee I told you about a long time ago.
It's like a bust.
It's a bust of a chimpanzee.
Oh, I remember this. And it's very realistic.
Very realistic. And Elvis, too, they have senses in the chimpanzee has a sensor in his nose. And when you walk by,
when he smells you, does he wrinkle it?
And follows you.
With his eyes?
With his eyes. And then he starts.
Oh, no.
Chimpanzee shouts. Elvis will follow you, and when you walk by him, he'll know that you're there.
Oh, that's creepy.
It's very scary because it's a full size bust. It's pricey. He's $349.
This is for the hardcore Elvis fan, but it'd be like having Elvis in your living room.
Your life. And then there are cartridges you buy with the songs on them, and it's approved by the Elvis Foundation or the Elvis Trust.
Elvis Presley Enterprises, EPE.
Yeah. And you know, I read that it was Elvis, I believe Elvis and Marilyn Monroe, that their estates earn more money now than when they were alive.
You're kidding.
Yeah. You know, that.
Boy, I can only hope that's true for me.
Oh.
Because it's been very bad while I've been alive. Maybe things will pick up once I'm dead.
Yeah.
Something to aim for anyway.
Right. Well, I have something. I have a clause in my will that when I die, they should throw $100 in with me, and then I will have earned more in death than
doing
than
this
I
entire
will.
Show. Wow. I mean, wowee. W-O-W.
Wow. Oh, very good.
I see it.
Leo, let's sell that.
Yeah. Ooh, wow.
Hey, Dick, that's great. Wow. No, Leo. Wowee.
W-O-W-W-E-E, two W's in the middle there. .com, the Wowie Alive line includes the
Oh, and I have to tell you one other thing that's neat. The Elvis Presley microphone that looks exactly like a stage microphone is the remote control. So it's very clever.
Obviously too pricey for somebody who's got a casual interest. But if you're an Elvis fan, this would be pretty wild to have in
this
your
This would be pretty wild.
House.
Leo, it also has external mic input if you want to sing with the king.
Registered trademark, Elvis Presley Center Enterprises, all rights reserved. Dick DiBartolo is online at gizwiz.biz. That's his website, and you can hear him every single week with me. Actually, every single weekday.
Every single day.
Yeah.
I'm the guy you do it with every single day.
I'm not sure I'd want to nose that around, but the netcast.
We're on opposite coast. All right.
At TWIT.TV, our netcast network, it's called the Daily Gizwiz, and then every week joins us for the weekly Gizwiz on this show. And his website, gizwiz.biz, is a great place to get an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. All you have to do is play the What the Heck Is It contest.
Is it game?
What is it? It is something really weird, yellow plastic. Thing you do, Dick, that drives me crazy is I have no idea how big this is.
I know. You know, people keep going, well, put a hand in it, put a quarter in it so we can see the scale.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to. There you go. Well, I don't want to.
I don't want to make it easy.
I don't want to do it. Yeah.
It could be really big or it could be really tiny. You just cannot tell. And I'm really, I guess the only people who would really get this right is somebody who actually recognized it.
Yeah. Well, you know, last month it was a little plastic clip that turned out last year's gadget was called Glove Holder, and it slipped on your belt, and then there was a little clip to clip gloves on. People are always losing gloves because you put your gloves down.
Right.
But Glove Holder was that gadget. But people sent in funny things like, is it a portable subway or bus handle? So you clip it on when you get on the bus and then you don't fly around so much. So there were some very funny things.
I have no. This is going to be something like that. It's just going to be something completely obscure. Yeah, I cannot.
Someone said, "Was last month's thing a fish crash test dummy
for fishes?"
Yeah, it's a very funny one.
Hey, do you have any more of those baseball caps, by the way?
Leo, I'm down to 20. Uh-oh. I am so. It started out as a lark, you know. I
love it.
The LED baseball cap. It has two very bright LEDs built into the brim, and a little switch in the back. And if you get stuck at night and you want to look under your hood of your car or under your desk or up in the
or just walk
attic,
down the street, you can see where you're going. It's like headlights for your hat.
Oh yeah, I use them when I walk the dogs at night to clean up doggy poop. And again, I got another email today. I am only buying a Gizwiz hat if you weigh it on your ultra ship scale,
which we talked about a few weeks back.
We talked about a few weeks ago. So it's great.
I have one of these, and you know what I find it's useful for is poker.
A poker player?
Yeah, and if it's not going well, you just turn on the lights and you blind your opponent. They're really bright.
Yeah, they are. I think they're like number 5 industrial.
They're really bright. Yeah. Gizwiz.biz, everybody. We thank you so much, Dick DiBartolo.
Yes, sir.
Please come back. Join us next week for another great gadget.
I'll be here.
He's so great. Just really love him. Hey, let's say hi to Gary in Santa Monica, our next caller. Hey, Gary, welcome. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi.
Well, it's good to talk to you, and I have an iPhone issue I need some assistance with.
All right. We don't get a lot of iPhone calls yet. This is exciting. My first iPhone call.
Well, I can't even lay claim to owning this. This is my employer's, and I'm the one who set up his previous Trio, so now I'm trying to get the iPhone to behave properly, and it is a miraculous device. But I'm trying to deal with email issues.
Yeah.
The iPhone is unique, like you've taught us, because it has both the AT&T wireless network, but it also can then jump onto a Wi-Fi network
exactly.
in a home or business or a hotspot.
Yep.
And setting the outgoing mail settings seems to be a problem. I mean, just trying to get AT&T's wireless to work is a bit of a problem.
Here's my suggestion. It really works best with Yahoo Mail. That's the only one that has push email, and it's the only one that has outbound email. You can choose to use any particular account. You can set up as many accounts as you want. You could choose to use any particular account for the outbound mail. I use my Gmail for outbound mail, and that works everywhere. Wi-Fi, AT&T.
I tried it. It didn't seem to work.
Wasn't working for you.
No, I didn't. But you're saying that same thing. I can set up as the primary email, outgoing email,
right.
a Yahoo account.
Yep. Try Yahoo.
Just never send from that account, but, you know, send mail from Gmail, from Earthlink, from company mail, whatever.
Yeah, this is what I do. I mean, I don't want to be getting my full inbox anyway because there's too many messages. So what I do is I have a filter on my main inbox for messages I really know I want from my mom, my wife, my kids, my employers, that kind of thing. And those I forward to a Yahoo Mail account. And the nice thing about the Yahoo Mail is, unlike any other mail account, on the iPhone, that one will push out to the iPhone. So when a new message comes in, you don't have to, you know, you set on the iPhone how often you want to check for mail. I set it to increase battery life. I set it to the highest amount. I think it's 1 hour or half hour for checks because it does have, I have other accounts on there, the Gmail account, my .Mac account, but I have it set to the highest amount. And then the Yahoo Mail will come in whenever there's new mail. So I have urgent mail go to Yahoo Mail. And then I use, it's just by accident, I'm using the Gmail as the outbound. That's worked fine for me. I don't know exactly what your issue is, but you certainly could set it to be Yahoo as well.
I spoke to both AT&T and Apple. They didn't seem to have an issue. I might have to go into the Apple store and see what they can do.
It's not been a problem for me on both Wi-Fi and AT&T's Edge network.
Good to hear that.
Yeah, I would go into the mail settings, though, and I actually purchased a full Yahoo Mail account for this very purpose.
Right, it's not expensive.
No, it's 20 bucks a year.
Right, that makes sense. Now, one other thing, Leo, this is now, in a sense, Apple's attempt at saying you don't need Palm devices anymore. But I used to also, with that Trio, sync between a business computer and a home computer.
Right.
But here, like the iPod,
you can only sync with one.
You can't have your contacts and your other stuff syncing. Why is that?
It has to do with the way iTunes works, and it's the way the iPod works, remember, also. You can only be associated with one iTunes account at a time.
Right. I can understand that for music, movies, TV, but why for my contacts and my calendar events can I be, you know?
Well, the way I do it, is it a heterogeneous environment? Does he have Windows and Mac?
Just Windows.
Just Windows. The way I do it, believe it or not, and this is, sounds very kludgy, but and it may or may not work depending on how his setup works. But I just have all of my calendars and contacts synchronized between all my systems anyway. So
you're using something in the background like an Exchange.
Exactly. Hosting, or you could use, believe it or not, you could use Yahoo to do that or Google to do that. The Yahoo calendars and Yahoo address book will sync. Plaxo is a very good choice for this also. They will sync all of your systems. So
through
I keep
the
them.
iPhone?
No, just through the internet. So I keep them all synced. So I don't care what the iPhone syncs with because it's going to be a complete calendar and a complete address book
anyway.
But what
happens if you create a new contact
it syncs.
Calendar event when you're on the iPhone? How do you get it into the other computer?
Well, then when it syncs with your iTunes, it will then sync to that calendar. And then the next time that calendar is synced via this third system, whether it's Plaxo or Yahoo, it will sync across the board. It works fine for me. I mean, there's a little time for propagation, but it works well for me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. So, just to talk a little bit about this issue, as we more of syncing your contacts in your address book, as we get more and more computers in our lives and we have maybe a laptop and a desktop and maybe an office computer, it gets more and more of an issue of, and a phone and smart devices, more and more of an issue that I want my contacts to be consistent across the board. I want my calendar to be consistent across the board. I want it so that if I add a calendar event on one device, it propagates to all of the devices. Same thing with an address book. And the iPhone does a pretty good job. Yes, it only syncs with one iCal. It only syncs with one address book or one Outlook. So you'll have to find a way, if you have multiple computers, to sync that computer with the other computers. It's not through the iPhone. But you know what? That's a believe me, anybody who's ever had a Palm and had it sync to multiple devices will realize why that's a better way to do it. As soon as you take a PDA or a smartphone and start syncing it to multiple devices, you're going to run into duplications. You're going to run into erasures. You're going to run into all sorts of problems. It's really much safer, much better to sync a device to a computer. And then, if you want to have consistency, you can sync the computers to each other using a separate system. So, as I said, I use .Mac because I'm all Mac. Well, actually, that's not true because in order to sync my Windows machines, then I will sync with Plaxo as well. So, I have a kind of complicated setup, but this works fine. I don't get duplications. I have backups of all my data. It works quite well, and everything's on the iPhone and everywhere else. As well, I use a number of phones. It's also on my Nokia N95. It propagates everywhere. My Z8 from Motorola propagates everywhere. So this is very nice. So think of it as a ring, a circle of computers. That circle of computers is synchronized together with something. In my case, it's .Mac in the center synchronizing all of them. You could use Plaxo as a very good service. I really like Plaxo. I was kind of anti-Plaxo for a long time because they used to send out spam. You know, if you weren't careful, it'd send out an email to everybody in your address book saying, "Hey, Leo's got a new address. You want?" It's very, very annoying. People came to hate Plaxo because of that. But frankly, Plaxo 3 is I think quite well implemented. And you know, they don't send out as many spams as they used to. Let's put it that way. So you've got a circle of all your computers and a central thing synchronizing it. It could be Yahoo calendars, by the way. Yahoo has very good IntelliSync for free. So it could be the Yahoo address book and calendar. But some central, usually web-based, synchronizing system synchronizes the computers. And then think of these devices as outliers connected to one and only one computer. So I have my iPhone connected to one computer. Data is synchronized between my iPhone and that computer and then propagates to the rest of the computers via .Mac or Plaxo or Yahoo. My N95 is synchronizing with another computer. I actually use Plaxo as an outlier, so I have Plaxo synchronizing with one computer. But if I make a change anywhere in that system, it eventually, maybe not right away, will propagate everywhere. So that's it. You have to think of it. It's really a network topology, believe it or not. It's helpful if you think of it that way and then plan it that way so that you don't have duplication or repetition. You want to make sure you don't have loops. That's where you can get in trouble. Apparently, with the now I use Gmail as my default account on the iPhone. I'm not sure if there's something you have to set in Gmail. You might look at your Gmail settings. I may have done that and not remembered. But I am able to send mail out through Gmail all the time. They, by the way, they kind of slipped it in, but there was a big upgrade to .Mac if you're a .Mac user. .Mac, you know, it's really on the cusp of being useful. $99, $79 if you get it from Amazon. And, you know, it has this synchronizing capability, which for me is worth it. I have a number of Macs, so it's worth it. But they only gave you a gigabyte for a long time of backup. They've now increased it to 10. And anybody who has a .Mac account, you should notice that your iDisk is now 10 gigabytes. That makes it a lot more useful. Plus, if you're using an iPhone, you're going to want to go to iLife 08 because that's the only way you can then have pictures go from your iPhone to a gallery on .Mac. Still no Flickr integration, unfortunately, but that's the next best thing anyway. I don't want to maintain multiple galleries. I have to figure out a way of getting this stuff over to Flickr. Debbie's in Newhall, California. Hello, Debbie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How about you?
Very, very well.
Good. Let me tell you my situation.
Okay.
I have an HP Pavilion laptop I bought in 2004. Tell me if you're hearing me. My phone's on speakerphone and I can't get it off.
I hear you fantastically.
Oh, good. Thanks. So when the computer was new, supposedly he had 512 megabytes of RAM.
Supposedly?
Well, my son is the computer savvy one here, not me, I'm afraid. But he talked to somebody and we attempted to go on the HP site to confirm that. We want to know if it started out with that. The problem is it's the computer's sluggish now. It used to be faster. And after going on
You think your RAM has gotten up and taken a walk?
Yeah, exactly. That's what it feels like.
No. I'll tell you what you're getting is something we in the business, the technical term we use for that is bit rot.
Bit what?
Bit rot.
Bit rot? Oh, God.
It's what happens to Windows machines after a while of adding and removing programs and so forth. And, you know, some people will say, oh, you know, do a disk defrag or you do a registry cleaner. That'll speed it up. And there certainly are
system
things.
System mechanic.
Yeah, I don't recommend. I'll tell you, there are lots of little things you can do like that. And sometimes those will help. But really what you need to do is start over. And I do this every year. You've had this thing now for 3 years.
Right.
Every year, what I do is I back up all my data. It gives me a good excuse to make sure I have a really good backup of everything. And I take those disks that HP gave you, the system recovery disks, system restore disks, and I just run them. Now, that's going to bring you back to the day it was new. And I bet you anything it'll run exactly the same speed as it did when you got it. Now you want to, first thing, immediately do system update. Get all those Windows updates on there because you're vulnerable until you do. And then you can restore your data. And you know what? It'll run beautifully. And only reinstall applications you know you want, because that's another thing that happens is people tend to add applications and keep adding them, and they never take them off, and it starts to just bog the thing down. So only it's an opportunity to kind of start fresh. And, you know, that computer will be exactly as fast as the day you got it, I promise you.
Oh, that would be swell. How about kids' games? My son plays a game, something, Warcraft or something.
Yeah, that doesn't slow it.
Mess it up?
No, it doesn't slow it down. It just takes up disk space. Just reinstall that, too. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Well, a very good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk about technology, that stuff that's changing our world. Oh, man, this never-ending fascination, constantly changing. I love it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number if you want to ask a question, make a suggestion, correction. Anything. 888-827-5536, 888-827-5536. It's easier to remember, maybe. 8888-ASK-LEO. 8888-ASK-LEO. Ask Leo. Let's go back to the phones. We've got so many calls, and I'd love to get as many in as I can. Starting with Gay in Covina, California. Hi, Gay. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi.
Hey.
I just need to ask you a quick question. I'm going to be going to Hawaii in about a month.
Okay.
And I'd like to get a new SLR digital camera. And I've got about $1,000 to $1,200 to spend on it. Is there a good one to get?
Oh, yeah. In fact, your price range is great. You have some very good choices out there. Do you have an investment in any lenses at this point, even if it's for a film camera?
Yeah, I do have some. I used to have a Minolta SLR.
Okay, you have Minolta lenses. I tell you, there really are only a few SLRs I'd recommend, and I don't even know if Minolta does an SLR. They do some very nice cameras. I'm a fan of the Nikons, the Canons, and to a lesser degree, the Olympus.
Okay.
If you're going to start from scratch these days, I say go Canon. I think Canon really has a lead in the digital camera business. I'll tell you in a second. If you'd had Nikon lenses, I'd say go Nikon. Minolta, you may be able to use those Minolta lenses with a Nikon, but the issue really is more, are they smart lenses? Are they the CPU lenses that are able to autofocus and do all of that? And chances are they're not. So you're pretty much starting from scratch at this point, I would guess.
I did have autofocus.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if the Minolta lenses will work with... if they're F style or what kind of lenses they are. So if you wanted to reuse those lenses, you might want to look for an SLR that supports that. This would be a good time to call somewhere like Bel Air Camera in the Southland there and say, hey, this is what I've got.
Bel Air Camera?
Yeah, they're a great little camera store in L.A. As an advertiser on our LA station, but they're the kinds of guys who could say, you know, Sony owns Minolta, and I'm trying to remember if the Minolta lenses will work on the Nikons. They may. I'll be honest with you, my favorite sub $1,000 SLR right now is the Canon Rebel XTi, and I think it is just a fantastic camera. Gives very good results. You're going to spend, I would get the body. The camera, the lens they offer in the kits is not necessarily my favorite lens. I would get the body, which is about $600, and then look for a good Canon lens. Canon makes some just fantastic lenses.
Great. Do you recommend any particular type of lens for... my daughter's got us going for zip lining and helicoptering.
What fun. Well, the top-of-the-line Canon lenses are the L lenses. They're more expensive, but they are more robust. They're sealed better. They hold up better. Nowadays, I used to really say, oh, you got to get a fixed length lens. You can't get a zoom. The optics aren't as good. But nowadays, they've really got the manufacturer of these lenses down. And I think they make very, very good zoom lenses. I have a couple for my Canon that I'm real fond of. Both of them L lenses. One is the 24-105, which is a pretty good range. You've got a very wide angle. I think for the zip lines, for instance, or any architectural stuff or outdoor stuff, it's fun to have that wide angle. And then it zooms to a 105, which is pretty good for portraiture and close-ups. So I would say that that Canon 24-105 would probably be a good choice.
Great.
Yeah, and that's a great setup. The nice thing is you're investing in good lenses, and if you decide that you want to upgrade the body, the lens is going to be good forever. The optics aren't going to change, but the bodies, they're improving constantly. More megapixels, more... quality pickups and so forth. Canon's just got some amazing pickups. Nikon's catching up, though. But right now, I think the Canon is just the way to go.
Okay, then I'll look into that.
Yep.
And one real quick question. Some time ago, you used to recommend McAfee for antivirus.
I've never, ever, ever in my life recommended McAfee. It must be other guy.
Okay, it was the other guy.
That other
so
guy.
I'm not renewing my contract because I know you recommended somebody else, and I need to have their name.
In my opinion, both McAfee and Norton have gotten so big, so bloated. They slow your system down so much, and I don't find them particularly effective. I don't think there's any reason to slow your system down. If they were 20 times better than everybody else, maybe, but they're not. Mm-hmm. So the one that we advertise is a very good one. So what I use is Nod 32. NOD32. It's from www.eset.com. It's a very effective antivirus. It's very fast. There are also good free antiviruses. They're not quite as good and not quite as fast, but they have the advantage of being free. My opinion is worth spending $30. I mean, this is the kind of thing you really want to protect your system. I think it's a good idea. So I'd say get the Nod 32. I never recommended McAfee. I find McAfee just
well, then we'll
awful.
Blame it on the other guy.
That other guy liked it. You can, for one thing, and you're going to come up against, it's very difficult to remove.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, fun. They don't like you to remove them. They just say, they dig their heels in. No, we're the best. No. No. I would say Nod 32 is really the best way to go.
All right. Okay. I'll go that way, and we'll go to Canon.
Oh, you're going to love it. Call me back and let me know what you think, okay?
I surely will.
I think you're going to love it. It's just a great camera. You know, I was a Nikon film fan for years, and I it was hard for me to give up Nikon. I have a Nikon D70. I think the D100s and D200s are excellent in the low price range. The lowest price SLR out there is a D40. Excellent camera. But when you're buying an SLR, those are the ones with the removable lenses. They're more serious cameras. Your investment is in the lenses. The bodies, look, they're going to change. They're going to get better and better because it's a computer. And like any computer, they're going to get better and better. But glass and optics is well understood. You're not going to see changes as rapidly in that area. So what you're really investing in is the lens. And I think I have to say I'm going to give Canon credit right now for having the best bodies and the best lenses. And if you have an investment in some other in Nikon lenses, good Nikon lenses, then go ahead and get a Nikon body because they're very good. But I have to say, for a starter SLR, the XTi, the EOS Rebel XTi is just excellent. Very reasonably priced. The lens that comes with their kit is an 18 to 55 millimeter. It's okay. It's okay. It's not my favorite. Canon makes better lenses. The nice thing is you can use any Canon digital lens. You have a lot of great choices there. A lot of great choices. This is a good time, actually, to be buying a camera. Frankly, I think they are now rivaling film, and almost all even professional photographers are starting to move to digital. They're finally giving up and saying, you know, okay, we're going to give in. We're going digital. The image quality is just amazing. And of course, the ability to use software now to take that picture and make it even better. Even if you're a great photographer, you can go the next step. You know, I would look at Lightroom too. Now, this is an expensive program. It's about a $300 program, but it's worth, I think, looking at for shoot. If you're going to get serious about your photography, you're shooting with a good SLR camera. You're going to shoot in RAW, which means the camera doesn't do any processing at all. You're going to need some software on your computer to process those images. You don't want to shoot JPEG because that means the camera will take some of that quality out. You want to shoot RAW and you want some software. And a lot of people go out and get Photoshop. I think that's overkill for many people. It's also a lot more expensive. Adobe's Lightroom, Mac and Windows, excellent program, about $300. And it's designed for digital photographers who want to take their RAW photos, make them look as good as possible, make them pop. And yet don't need the fine detail of Photoshop. The big difference between Lightroom and Photoshop is adjustments made in Lightroom and you have a lot of capability, but they're all made to the picture as a whole. And in Photoshop, you can take regions of a picture and play with regions of a picture. So I think you should maybe take some of that budget. I know you said $1,000 to $1,200. Get the Rebel, be about $700, and then take the rest of the money and get Lightroom. That way you'll be able to take those pictures and really make them sing. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. Chat room is open, irc.dslextreme.com, coming real close to 400 people. That means it scrolls by very fast, but it's still fun to participate and lots of extra information. They're talking back all the time. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. Chat room is irc.dslextreme.com. And if you want to go to the website, that is techguylabs.com. Brian, San Francisco, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm actually just enjoying the San Francisco weather.
It's a beautiful day, I know, in the Bay Area right now.
Nice little breeze right down here sitting by the cable line.
Is the sun out?
I've got a... What's that?
Is the sun out?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Well, you know what? I think I see a cloud off in the distance.
What can I do for you here?
It's being moved off.
Oh, nice.
Hey, I picked up a Mac like 2 months ago, and I'm having a problem with Firefox beachballing on me.
Yeah, I think Firefox 2 is a little buggy, to be honest with you.
Okay, so it is because I've heard you talk about it, but you always say, well, depends on what extensions are.
Yeah, and it's true. The fewer extensions you use, the better it will be, and you can get extensions that will make it even more buggy.
Right, but, yeah, and that's what kind of had me curious, because I don't use any extensions or add-ons.
Yeah, I think it's a little buggy.
Not for any, So
unfortunately, I'm hooked on the Firefox extensions, but if you're not using the extensions, stick with Safari. That's the browser that comes on the Mac. I would just stick with that. It's a good browser. Doesn't have the Firefox extensions, but it's fast. It's reliable. It's as secure as anything. And I think it's pretty good. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Coming up, Steve Gibson, our security guru. More of your calls to 8888. Ask Leo is my number. Love to hear from you. 8888. Ask Leo. Now 400 people in the chat room at irc.dslextreme.com. I do thank our moderators in there who keep it safe and clean, and they boot anybody who is causing trouble. That makes it family friendly. And Dan and Mick and Mike and Sasha, you're doing a great job. Doing a great job. Back to the phones we go. Let's see. Brian in San Francisco. We talked with Brian. Let's go to Tracy in Lompoc, California. Hey, Tracy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey.
How's it going?
Going great.
Calling you about an iMac.
Okay.
You finally talked us into buying an iMac.
Did you get the new one?
Yeah.
Oh. Do you have it yet?
Yeah. I already have it.
How do you like it?
It's nice. It's different. Been using Windows computers for a long time, so it's different.
There'll be a little learning curve for you. You bet.
Oh yeah, I'm starting to get used to all the navigation.
First thing I would do, though, and I suggest all former Windows users do this, is get rid of the Apple mouse.
Yeah, and I almost did.
Yeah, and just get any Windows mouse will work fine. If you have your old Windows mouse lying around, or any 3-button mouse, but just get a 3-button mouse, a real 3-button mouse, as opposed to the Mighty Mouse.
Yeah, that was one of the things I started screaming about in the very beginning.
Yep, it'd make you crazy. But the neat thing is, as soon as you have a right-click, you'll see that just as on Windows, the right-click, does a lot of stuff on the Mac. It's very similar to Windows.
Mm-hmm. So my question for you here today.
Yes.
I'm trying to manage all the photos that we brought in from the PC hard drive.
Right.
And we dumped them into the iMac, and in an iMac, you can't see the thumbnails in the folders. You can see preview.
You actually can.
You can?
Yeah, you can do thumbnails. Is there some reason just out of curiosity, I know you'd like to see thumbnails, and I'll tell you how, but you are using iPhoto too, though, right?
I bounced into iPhoto after I couldn't get the thumbnails to work through the folder system.
Right.
But I had some questions about iPhoto also.
Yeah, I think the new iPhoto, you've got iLife, is pretty great. The way to get, so I would certainly use that for most of your management, but I understand that coming from Windows, you want to be able to open a folder and look at a folder with photos in it and see what those photos are just by looking at them in the photo. And it's just a preference. So first of all, you're going to have to, when you open your photo folder, make sure that you are looking at it in the icon view.
That's, icon view?
Yeah, there's three ways to view in a Finder window. There's the icon view, there's the list view, which is the equivalent of details in Windows, and then there's a unique view, it's called the column view, that is not duplicated in Windows. And I use that for navigating. I like the column view. But if you want to see thumbnails, you have to be in the icon view. And that's just like the Windows icon view. You'll have icons. Now, here's what I would suggest. When you're in the icon view, you can go to, in the Finder preferences, or you could just press Command Comma. That's a good thing to know. Command Comma opens preferences in any application. But you're going to open the view options. Actually, in this case, it's Command J. I'm sorry, because it's not preferences. That'll open the view options. So it's under the view menu, and there's a checkbox that says Show Icon Preview, and that'll turn on the pictures.
There's also a slider there that lets you change the icon size from 16 by 16 to 128 by 128. I would imagine you'd want them as big as you can, but you could choose anything up to 128 by 128. And that'll give you a thumbnail view of of your images.
Okay, so I'm in the folder. I just hit
Command-J.
Command-J, and it's going to take me to the screen to do that.
And you can say this window only, or you could say all windows. So you can make that be just for that folder or for all folders. I would say all windows. No reason not to have a preview. It doesn't take up any more time or anything. And then that way you can see thumbnails of all your photos. Most people, I'll have to say that Apple does not put as much functionality into these folder windows as Windows does. It doesn't have the slideshow and all of those different capabilities. It really, Apple expects you to do all that stuff in iPhoto, not in the Finder. And that's, I think, probably the biggest difference, the cultural difference that Windows users find when they go to Apple. Windows is really designed to give you as many different ways of doing things as possible. And Apple comes from a philosophy that if you give people too many ways of doing things, they get confused. So we kind of want to encourage you to do one basic method. And so the Finder is not as capable. I actually misspoke. There is a slideshow in the Finder. I forgot there's a slideshow button. But Apple's really designed to kind of... Where you'll find frustration is you won't be able to do as many different things as you'd like. In any, you'll be able to do everything that you can do in Windows, but it might not be in the same place, and there may not be 100 different ways of doing it. There may be only one or two. But I think you'll pretty quickly get through that. There's a very good book. There are a number of good books for Windows users moving to Mac, switching to Mac. My favorite book is not specifically for Windows users, although he is a Windows user, and so his discussions are very useful for Windows users. It's David Pogue's Mac OS X, The Missing Manual. Thick book, but lots of information in there. And that's the kind of thing you can look up. You know, I apologize for not remembering that there's a slideshow in there. And it's because I don't use the Finder to do that kind of thing. I do almost everything in iPhoto. It takes a little while. You're going to struggle a little bit. I know it's a different language. It's really a different culture. But ultimately, I think it fits a little better to the home user. Windows is more for business, in my opinion. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for the call. Oh, you don't want to see it. When geeks cry. Oh. Terrible. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. I'm trying to think, what recommendations, if you're moving to Mac from Windows, it's a big move. Same thing if you were moving from Windows to Mac. I'm trying to think of my recommendations for people moving to Mac from Windows. I think the first thing is get a 3-button mouse, because you'll feel much more at home. And just use it. I think, you quickly learn, control panel, no, it's system preference pane. You know, the system preferences. To do the slideshow in Finder, by the way, I didn't mention that. And I thank Mike B. for reminding me that the slideshows are available in the Finder preview. You just right-click on an image, any image in there, and select slideshow from the pop-up menu. See why you want the right-click? The right-click is so useful. And so you can actually, there's some pretty good capability built into the Finder. It's just not immediately obvious. As with Windows, right-clicking things is just a great idea just to see what you can do. A lot of times I think Windows users complain because you can't tweak it as much, right? You can't mess with it as much. There's not as many settings and buttons and stuff. And I think that if you're used to that and you want that, you feel like you're kind of disenfranchised on the Mac. And that is true. There is kind of an attitude coming from the very earliest Mac. The actual early Macintosh user guidelines, interface guidelines, suggested that you... they said you should be monotonous. this is the purest point of view. You should be monotonous. That is, everything, you should only do everything one way, not have multiple ways to do things. Monotony is considered a good thing in software interface design.
I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He is Stephen Gibson, the security guy.
And, yes, we each are.
each week we talk about security issues. Steve has a really great ability to explain this stuff and make it easy to understand or relative. It's not, I'll be honest, I don't want anybody to feel dumb if they listen and they don't get it. It's not all that easy to understand, but I think Steve does a good job of making it as easy as it's going to be. Unfortunately, this is something we all need to learn about, isn't it?
Well, yes. I think that it's clear now, and I'm sure you know this already, Leo, the internet has turned out not to be a fad.
It's going to be here for a little while.
I think we are stuck with the internet, you know, love it or not.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it's not exactly the safest place on earth. There are people out there who would like to steal from you, would like to use your computer for nefarious purposes, and are, you know, pretty clever and aggressive about sneaking in. So that's where Steve really has been a great boon, not only with the free software he gives away at grc.com, but with the Security Now podcast we do every week where he talks about this. What do we want to talk about this week?
Well, I discovered just by pure coincidence the other day that Microsoft had slipped a new and very significant for the future feature into Windows XP. This is something actually that you and I have discussed on our Security Now podcast. It's something that Microsoft has unfortunately sort of an awkward name for. They call it card space. When they were developing it, they called it InfoCard, which is a much better name, but there's been some discussion that perhaps there was a trademark collision, maybe even with something that Apple did years ago, that prevented them, perhaps, I don't know this for sure, from actually naming it InfoCard. Anyway, it is a feature that is in Vista, and while things that are in Vista are, to me, interesting, as a security guy, I'm not ready to go to Vista yet. So the fact that card space is in Vista really was like, okay, well, maybe in a couple years that'll matter. Well, what's cool is that I discovered with my normal monthly or even more often, in some cases, patches from Microsoft, that all of my XP systems acquired this card space feature at some point in the recent past. What card space is, and well, it is a means for providing information in a convenient, nice, and most importantly, secure fashion to various websites that you visit. And that information are things like your logon information, maybe your address and phone number, the sorts of things that we're having to supply over and over and over when we're doing e-commerce, for example, on sites around the internet. What's unique about this is that you're able to create these things called info cards, which contain whatever information you choose to provide. And you can have different info cards. One, for example, that is actually an alias for yourself when you log on to blogging sites, and one that might be, you know, all of your information with your true shipping address and even credit card information, which you routinely use for e-commerce applications. The system is extremely secure. Now, the idea
is with an info card, we don't have to remember all the passwords we used to have to remember. We'd have an info card and would kind of log us into all the different places, provide that information that, you know, addresses and so forth that we want to give them, that kind of
yes.
thing?
Yes, the jargon for this is single sign-on, meaning that you're able to just go to once card space is widely supported by the internet community, and it looks like it has a good chance because it's able to use a free system which is gaining popularity quickly called OpenID. The idea would be if you go to a site that says it supports card space or OpenID, you're able to just click on one of these cards and with all the security that we know how to implement at this state in time, you're able to log on, provide your identity, provide them with like your credit card information, your purchasing information, billing and shipping with a single click.
Now, as you've often said, convenience and security sometimes don't go together. This is a very convenient system. You feel fairly confident
that it is secure, that we don't have to worry about putting all our stuff in this one bin?
Yes, the way it's been, again, the way it's been developed, even this information we're talking about is not stored on your computer. And that's one of the ways it really achieves security, is that there are third-party, highly trusted security providers that actually hold this. And when you click on the card, the information is retrieved on the fly. You're presented with what would be about to be sent to the site you want to provide this to, so you can verify what you're about to give them and then say yes. And we are able to strengthen this with all kinds of what's called multi-factor authentication. For example, you could require that before a certain card was provided, that your cell phone receive a code number which you have to enter in to prove that you're you doing this and that you own or you have possession of your cell phone. Or little keychain dongles could be used to provide that information. There's all this extra security which is available in this system.
Sounds like a neat idea. I look forward to having it be implemented. Right now I use on Windows a program called RoboForm AI, and on Mac 1Password that does something similar. But this would be, the sites themselves would support it. So I wouldn't have to do it all the work on my end.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, good. I'll have to, is there anywhere I can actually use it yet?
Well, no. It's very new. Just beginning to evolve.
If I fill out my cards on XP and Vista, I'll at least have the information there.
Exactly. I was just going to say that if people want to see what it looks like, it's in the control panel. Under the Windows control panel in XP is where it appeared. And you just click on it, and it walks you through some screens, and you can see how these things work. It's very cool, and I think it's going to be the future.
Something to watch for. Watch for Steve Gibson, or at least listen for him every week on twit.tv. He does Security Now on Thursdays and every weekend. On this radio show, stops by to explain interesting new developments in the field of security. Don't forget, SpinRite, his program to recover and maintain your hard drive, is available from grc.com. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Leo.
And I should point out that CardSpace isn't a magic download. It's not going to automatically appear on XP. In order to get CardSpace, you have to update XP to .NET 3, but it is part of the new .NET. And I'll put a link in the show notes to more information about CardSpace. Comes with Vista, does not come with XP unless you upgrade to .NET version 3, and then you'll get it just kind of automatically. They don't mention it. Not a lot of places support it yet, but I think it's in time. It could be very good. Steve and I both are big supporters of OpenID, the idea that an open, non-proprietary way of verifying your identity on the net so that you don't have to remember 800 different passwords is a really good idea, as long as it's secure. It's a really, really good idea. 8888 Ask Leo. If you're on the line, hang on the line. I'm going to get to every call, I promise, even if I have to do it after the show gets over. Let's see. Dave in the Redlands, California. Hello, Dave. Welcome to the show. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good afternoon, Leo.
Hi.
I'm looking for a 24-inch LCD computer monitor, and I'm considering three options. I do a lot of photo editing and graphic design. Mm-hmm. I'm not really into gaming.
Mm-hmm.
And the three that I'm considering are the Dell, which you've had favorable comments about in the past.
Yeah.
The Samsung 245BW.
Very good. Yep.
I saw both positive and negative comments about that on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And the Samsung 244T-BK, which had some a little bit better reviews. I wondered what you thought about.
I've been very happy with the Samsung monitors. I use a Samsung monitor all the time, but I do think the Dells, price-wise, the Dells give you the most bang for the buck. They're just really great monitors. I have to ask you, though, when you say you're doing photography, is color management really important to you? Do you want to have a super accurate monitor?
Pretty accurate. And I know that LCDs don't give the same accuracy.
They tend not to. Now, this is going to be way out of your budget, but... when I talk to color experts, they say that the best monitor, that neither the Dell nor the Samsung are super accurate, that the best monitor for color management is the EZIOs, but they're about three or four times more expensive. So I only want to mention that so that you understand. Yeah, LCD, because of the way it works, because of the fluorescence, are not as accurate. The LEDs will be more accurate, so it might be worth looking for an LED-based monitor. And ultimately, there's only one manufacturer I know of that really spends a lot of time making their monitors color accurate, and that's why they're so much more expensive, and that's the EZIO's, EZIO.
And that's, what was that again?
EZIO, EZIO.
EZIO?
Yep. Okay, Dave, but I get two thumbs up for the Dell. Unless you're really finicky over color, the Dell is spectacular. Leo Laporte, and a great price. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I got a billboard, Leo.
Unlimited local and long distance calling for less than $20 a month. Call 888-60-POWER. That's 888-60-POWER.
Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Just a few minutes to go, but as I said, if you're already on the line, hang on, because I want to get to all of you. I don't want to leave anybody hanging. And I'll be back, as I always am. I come back every week on this very fine radio station at this very fine time, and I hope you come back and join me. Don't forget that I have podcasts all week long. You know, I have I think a dozen podcasts now, something like that. Those are internet radio shows you can listen to on the website, or you can download and listen to on your MP3 player. Don't have to have an iPod to use it. Those are all available from my website, thisweekintech.com. Maybe easier to remember, twit.tv, TWIT.TV, or thisweekintech.com. And we cover all sorts of subjects, including this radio show. This is a podcast. Mary's on the line. Mary Grace, I'm sorry, from Redlands, California. Hey, Mary Grace.
Are you there?
I am here. How are you?
Okay. I have iTunes on my computer, and it's an XP, and I just can't get it to play. I've tried downloading it again.
Oh, that's too bad.
You know, I deleted it and then downloaded it again, and it still won't work. And I wondered what recommendations you had.
Do you get sound from other programs?
No.
Okay. So you haven't heard a sound. You haven't heard a peep out of your computer.
No.
Okay. So there are a lot of things that could be missing here. Have you ever gotten sound out of your computer?
No.
All right.
Do
you have speakers?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Forgive me for asking such a question, but, you know, believe it or not, there are people who think, well, no, and the computer has speakers, right? Doesn't necessarily. And you've a couple of things to check to see if you're getting sound. It could be the speakers. Are they powered up? Are they connected properly?
They are, because I listen to you online, actually.
Oh, so you... Oh, see, that is sound out of your computer.
Yeah, I get it out of the speakers. It's just that when it goes to play, it just, like, kind of freezes. Nothing will play with iTunes. My other media player and other things will play, but not.
Oh, okay. So that's what I was wondering. So your computer does play sounds. It's just only iTunes doesn't play.
I'm sorry.
It's a different issue if your computer doesn't make sounds at all. So your computer does make sounds. That's a good news. iTunes, I have to say, iTunes on Windows is sometimes problematic. I don't know if it's because Apple doesn't know how to develop for Windows or what, but frequently there are issues. You say it freezes. Does that mean that when you have something on iTunes and you press the play button,
it just won't play whatever it is that's supposed to come up?
And it doesn't. Now, I don't know if you'll know this, but when you press play on iTunes, the play button turns to a pause button, and you can see the progress of the song in that little window on the top. Do you see progress? Is the song?
No.
It's just not playing at all. So and the play button doesn't turn to a pause button. It just won't accept a play command. Sounds like you've got a bad installation of QuickTime. iTunes uses QuickTime to reproduce its music, and it requires QuickTime. So my suggestion is you could just uninstall and reinstall. Often that works, and sometimes,
which I already did.
You already did that.
It didn't work.
Okay, and sometimes with iTunes and on Windows, it's better to install QuickTime first and then install iTunes. So what you might do is go to apple.com/QuickTime and just first uninstall QuickTime and uninstall Apple iTunes. Make sure you both uninstall both. Reinstall QuickTime. Do a new version of QuickTime first, and then install iTunes. I think that's the problem. iTunes needs QuickTime to play back. And it sounds like it's not finding him. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Okay. At least worth a try.
I don't use it all that much, but if somebody sends me something and that's what it uses to go pick,
that's the other thing you can do is you can tell it not to use iTunes to play back stuff. If you don't need to use iTunes, you can have everything play back in Windows Media Player. And, and all you have to do to make that happen permanently is when somebody sends you something that opens iTunes, just right-click on that file and select Open With, and then say Open With Windows Media Player. And that'll work better. Or Send To sometimes Windows Media Player. And you don't need to use iTunes. It's just that for some reason, because you installed iTunes, it's set up to automatically take over Play. Well, in that case, I'd say if you don't need iTunes and it's not working for you, don't even worry about it. Just get Windows Media Player to play instead. Right-click on the file and say Play With Windows Media Player. You can even make it permanent by selecting, I think it's Open With, and then tell it to permanently open it with Windows Media Player from now on. That's probably what I would do. Let's see if I have time. I think I have time. Thank you so much, Mary Grace, for the call. One more call here before we go off the air. But if you're on again, hang on. We will get to everybody. Kathy's in Costa Mesa. Hey, Kathy, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi there.
Hi.
Okay. For years, I have shot with an Iconus, which you can imagine is very bulky.
Yes.
And I've started going back into the water to surf, to take pictures of kids at a surf camp.
Oh, fun. Oh,
and it's
fun.
Great fun.
Oh, yeah.
But it's very rocky, and running in and out of the water every 24 shots is a pain in the neck.
You need to get a digital camera.
I got a digital. I got an Olympus 770.
Okay. That's that waterproof one.
It's waterproof.
Yeah.
To 33 feet, you know, 10 meters.
Uh-huh.
All kinds of great settings, all kinds of great fun. I mean, I'm a computer
It's a great
programmer.
Camera. Yeah.
I am a computer programmer. I'm usually pretty good with all this stuff. However, I cannot see what I am shooting on the LCD. All I can see is my reflection.
Yep. That's it's a refraction issue. It's a very common problem underwater, and I don't really know what the answer is on that, to be
honest.
But
I'm not underwater. I'm above water.
Oh, you can't see it in the daylight.
I'm in the daylight.
Yeah.
I'm above water because I'm waiting for them to surf by
so
I can get a picture of them on the wave as they surf by.
Some LCDs do not do a very good job in daylight.
I'm discovering this one doesn't.
And it does. You got one that doesn't. Pentax also makes a waterproof camera. I'm sure you don't want to buy another one. I don't know of any way to fix it, though. I mean, if it's a bad camera in daylight, you can buy little hoods that you put on the LCD to shade it. But I don't know how practical that is if you're taking it underwater, too. That's a problem. In fact, it's a big problem with a lot of cameras. I there's no way to fix it except to get a different camera, I'm sorry to say. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. We'll see you later. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear the Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.